thousands of residents of Lashkar Gah are in big trouble.
We will discuss the situation in Afghanistan with our correspondent. It's Friday, August 6th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also ahead, many Afghans are leaving their country, much to the dismay of where many are headed. More than 700 quarantined from one Arkansas school district due to COVID. Steve Ross will join us from the Tokyo Olympic Games. China is criticized by the way it goes fishing. Australian researchers say a gel they developed could radically transform the treatment of Parkinson's disease. It's all on today's VOA Asia. The United Nations Security Council will hold an open meeting Friday on the deteriorating situation in Afghanistan, according to diplomats. The discussion was requested by the Afghan government as well as Norway and Estonia. The Security Council last met on Afghanistan in June, but the situation in the conflict-ridden country has rapidly worsened since then. The Taliban control large swaths of the countryside and are now challenging Afghan government forces in several large cities, including Herat near the western border with Iran and Kandahar in the south. Fighting has raged since May 8th when U.S. and other foreign forces began the first stage of a troop withdrawal due to be completed later this month. The Afghan military launched a counterattack in the southern city of Lashkar Gah, where insurgents have infiltrated several areas. VOA's Ayaz Ghul joined International Edition host Steve Miller from Islamabad with the latest.
Thousands of residents of Lashkar Gah are in big trouble, in fact have been in big trouble over the past many days. And over the last 2 days, they have been just sort of confined to their homes because most of the city now has fallen to the Taliban. There are a few government administrative buildings and the city airport, which is controlled by the Afghan government. But the rest is with the Taliban. And Tuesday evening, there were announcements by the Afghan military urging residents to leave the city because they were intending to launch a big operation against the Taliban. And that added more problems for the civilians because they have no way to escape the city. So, and ironically, provincial health officials urge the residents of Lashkar Gah to remain inside their homes because they warn them that if they come out, they may be caught in the crossfire. So these poor civilians in the city are really caught in big trouble. They don't know what to do. But the fighting, we know for sure that there were serious clashes going on inside the city. And in fact, Taliban tried to capture the police headquarters in Lashkar Gah. Intense clashes have also been going on in the northeastern Tahar province, which borders the Central Asian republics of Tajikistan and Turkmenistan. In that area, we are now hearing reports of serious fighting. So it seems that Taliban are really taking the fight to the urban centers in Afghanistan.
Ayaz Ghul talking with VOA's Steve Miller. As one might expect, many Afghans are fleeing their country. We'll explore that momentarily. You're listening to VOA Asia. These are some of the stories you'll find at voanews.com. Brunei diplomat appointed ASEAN's special envoy to Myanmar. Myanmar's UN representative alleges massacres by military. Chinese expansion into the South Pacific appears to have run aground, at least temporarily, in Samoa, where a Beijing allied leader has been defeated in a history-making election. Angry villagers in the Indian capital held a protest Thursday outside a crematorium where they say a 9-year-old girl was raped and killed earlier this week. Chaos in Manila as thousands rush to get vaccine before lockdown. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. The rise of violence between the Taliban and the Afghan government forces has triggered a new influx of Afghan refugees to Turkey. VOA's Arif Aslan reports from Turkey's Van province in this story narrated by Namo Alja.
These people have arrived in Turkey's Van province after walking for over 20 hot summer days from Afghanistan and Iran. They are among thousands of Afghans who recently fled their country due to a surging armed confrontation between the Afghan government and the Taliban.
We spend the nights out in the mountains, and during the days we have to walk under the sun with no food and water. Blisters are all over our feet. It is cold at night, cold, and it is hot during the days.
Turkish officials in Van say they have registered over 34,000 refugees crossing from Iran, with Afghans making up the majority. Nearly 1,500 refugees and 11 smugglers have been detained for illegal crossing.
Refugees crossing the border are often sent back across the border when they are caught by Turkish guards. This is not a legal situation. This is illegal. Once people have crossed the border and entered into Turkey, the police or gendarmerie who caught them must register them into the system after completing the processes such as identifying those people and taking their fingerprints.
VOA has learned that smugglers often transfer the Afghans at night from dangerous routes across Pakistan's Balochistan province into Iran and then to Turkey. Children are most vulnerable in this journey toward the final destination, Europe.
We walk the whole night without knowing where we are going. We walk through the deserts and roads. The stray dogs were wandering around us. The kids got really scared. The dogs chased us and we were this much close to grabbing the kids. We went to a mosque and slept for 2 hours and then hit the road again. May God help us.
Nearly 3 million refugees and asylum seekers in the world are Afghans. The International Organization for Migration estimates that the number of Afghans crossing the border illegally has increased by 30% to 40% since May, when international forces began withdrawing from Afghanistan and the Taliban increased its attacks.
The Taliban raided our village. They burned down all our houses. They burned everything. They burned our farms and all our products, including our orchards and grain fields.
The new refugee influx comes as the U.S. is set to withdraw its troops from Afghanistan by August 31st. With the U.S. gone and the Taliban capturing more territory, it remains unclear if the militants will agree on a peaceful resolution to the conflict with the Afghan government. For Arif Aslan, reporting from Van, Turkey, this is Namu Abdullah, VOA News, Washington.
You're listening to VOA Asia. Happening now in Asia, Indonesia's foreign minister says her nation has entered a new era of bilateral relations with the United States as the country's armed forces launch their biggest ever joint training exercise. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you are with us on VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. The number of students and staff at a school district in Arkansas who have quarantined because of a coronavirus outbreak grew to more than 700 on Wednesday as lawmakers in the state debated whether to allow schools to mandate masks. Meanwhile, the second wave of the coronavirus pandemic has put millions of people in India out of work, with women bearing the brunt of the losses. A trade union leader warned that it may take years to get back on track. Reuters' Eve Johnson reports.
A cluster of job seekers gather near a busy street in northern India. Among them, more than a dozen women, one of them cradling a sleeping child. They've been looking for work ever since a second vicious wave of coronavirus cases hit. Now they are stuck in Gurugram, a city of more than a million people, but little opportunity.
We have small children and we're just sitting here with them. We don't even have money to get back to our village. There are so many problems.
The global pandemic has wiped out employment for 15 million people in India, and women have been the hardest hit, according to trade and industry leaders. The vast majority of women here are in low-skill work, factory or farm or domestic jobs, the first to go when times get tough. Savitri Devi lost her job at a garment factory last year and has been looking for work ever since, with no luck.
There are a lot of challenges. Eating, drinking, everything is a challenge. There's practically nothing. I managed to cook one meal, but can't provide for the second.
Besides the loss in household income, the unemployment crisis also threatens to undo a decade of social gains made by women in India. That's according to Amarjeet Kaur, a trade union leader.
We find lots of child labor once again entering into the market, girls losing their education, child marriages happening, and women suffering domestic violence at home, and they are burdened with taking care of children, old, sick people in the family.
Kaur wants the government to help women get back to the workforce by offering incentives. She said it may take several years to return to the way things used to be, if it happens at all.
That was correspondent Eve Johnson.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook and say hello anytime you're online or on your smartphone. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, read, and share all the latest from VOA Asia anytime.
This news from VOA Asia. Investors dump alcohol and e-cigarette stocks in China after state media run reports about the dangers of their products, sending related company shares lower. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. We continue with VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. It was a good showing for Asia at the Olympics. Steve Ross is our reporter in Tokyo.
Today, Japanese wrestler Risako Kawai winning gold in the women's 57-kilogram freestyle, beating Irina Kurachkina of Belarus in the final bout. On Wednesday, Kawai's sister Yukako winning in the 62-kilogram division. China maintaining dominance in women's table tennis, beating Japan in the gold medal match 3-0. Table tennis Team China remains undefeated in both the men's and women's team events since the sport's Olympic debut at the 2008 Beijing Games. And in the men's 400-meter race, Stephen Gardner of the Bahamas grabbing the gold, finishing in 43.85 seconds, with Colombia's Jose Anthony Zambrano taking the silver and Granada's Kirani James earning the bronze. Today, Tokyo Olympics officials reporting 31 new games-related COVID-19 cases, some of those individuals at first in the athletes' village, but later relocated to isolation facilities. The group includes athletes as well as contractors, officials, media members, and volunteers. Tokyo and Japan nationwide now experiencing an unprecedented surge in COVID-19 cases, with some policymakers advocating strict European-style lockdown measures to contain viral spread. American bicycle motocross rider Connor Fields released today from Tokyo's St. Luke's International Hospital 5 days after a crash in his Olympic semifinal race left him with brain bleeding and other injuries. Connor now expected to return to his home in Nevada. Tokyo Olympic beach volleyball is being supplied with recorded lively cheers, music, and crowd ambiance by a master of ceremonies and a DJ, all to recreate the party atmosphere considered normal for the sport's pre-pandemic era when audiences numbered in the thousands. Tokyo Olympics athletes now fighting Olympic regulations limiting social media product endorsement, the internet exposing how the International Olympic Committee allows athletes from different nations a varying number of positive brand comments online, with a broad trend toward athletes seeking more freedom to comment, more rights online, and greater earning power. Join us next time for more highlights. Steve Ross for VOA News, Tokyo.
After more than a year at the front line of the coronavirus, Japanese doctor Soji Yokobori has now been thrust into the oddly calm world of the Olympics, overseeing a venue with strict protocols, no spectators, and low infection risks. Reuters' Libby Hogan reports.
Japanese doctor Soji Yokobori says his days as an emergency medical officer at the Olympics are strangely quiet. He oversaw weightlifting this week, where by Tuesday, he was yet to see a major injury and so far no cases of the coronavirus.
Now I feel that so safety here because we have no COVID inside and you know that we don't feel the pandemic just like in a bubble.
Tokyo's Olympics bubble, where more than 80% are vaccinated against the coronavirus, is a sharp contrast to Yokobori's regular life on the outside, running the intensive care unit at Nippon Medical School Hospital in Tokyo. But the world is never far away. He still receives urgent calls from his own hospital staff, asking questions like whether to use lung support for critical COVID-19 cases.
But when we go back to the real world, like in the hospital, and you know that as you see the many patients of COVID-19 is now existing here. So now we are struggling every day. Our team is also, so this also makes us a little exhausted. So you know, heaven and hell.
The doctor is worried about Japan's worsening number of cases and said he is prepared to leave the Olympic venue permanently to return to the hospital should the virus situation worsen. For Japanese culture that takes pride in exquisite hospitality, the doctor has been forced to provide a lower level of service than he would prefer to prevent cross-contamination between his workplace and the Olympic venues. All in all, Yokobori, a fan of tennis player Naomi Osaka, said he was still proud to contribute to the Olympics.
That was correspondent Libby Hogan. Making headlines in Asia, Pakistan deployed paramilitary forces in a central town on Thursday to check communal unrest after a mob ransacked and set fire to a Hindu temple after reports that a Hindu boy had urinated in the library of an Islamic seminary. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, China is the world's major seafood producer, and critics say its fleets engage in aggressive tactics as the nation tries to feed its 1.4 billion people. Michael Sullivan reports from Honolulu that U.S. fishermen are worried about China's expanding footprint in the Pacific.
Early morning in Honolulu, fresh yellowfin, big-eye tuna, and other fish are up for auction. Hawaii's fishermen target the same stocks as the boats of other nations, and monitoring groups see an upsurge in China's activities in Pacific waters. The U.S. Coast Guard warns of expanded illegal, unreported, and unregulated fishing by the ships from many countries, including China, further threatening depleted marine resources. Pacific fishing fleets are closely watched under U.S. domestic and international law.
You know, we have independent observer coverage levels of at least 20% in our tuna fishery, whereas China barely scratches 5%. And, you know, we have a whole suite of environmental laws and statutes and regulations.
Satellite imagery suggests a Chinese fleet is approaching Ecuador, bordering its exclusive economic zone, threatening sensitive sea life near the Galapagos Islands. Critics say Chinese ships often break the rules, encroaching on South Korean waters. Plus, Chinese vessels have been found to fish off the coast of North Korea, operating in a gray zone, says an analyst at a Hawaii center funded by the U.S. Department of Defense, who stresses that his opinions are his own. He says China is threatening fish stocks as it pursues strategic goals.
They have huge factory ships with whole flotillas of actual fishing vessels around them, and so they can move into an area and fish intensively and process a huge amount of fish in their big sort of mothership before leaving.
China has the largest fishing fleet in the world and is the world's biggest consumer of seafood. Its distant water fleet is huge, and China says it will cap it at 3,000 vessels. The U.S. Coast Guard says another 3,000 paramilitary ships back up the Chinese fleet. One estimate puts its fleet size much higher when Chinese ships that fly the flags of other nations are included. Some expansion is perfectly legal through China's agreements with Pacific Island nations allowing its ships to fish their waters and build a port in Kiribati, joining other facilities from Ghana to Myanmar, part of China's Belt and Road Initiative. There is some pushback. Samoa's new prime minister has canceled plans for a Chinese-financed port. Concerns are growing in the nearby U.S. territory of American Samoa, its tuna catch slashed by Chinese fishing boats that surround its waters.
And you have one player that doesn't seem to have any controls on the expansion of its fishing fleet and of its capacity to extract these renewable resources. It's of great concern to us.
Fisheries in many parts of the world are threatened, but experts in Hawaii say local tuna stocks have not been overfished. One guideline will keep it that way.
Simply, don't take more than the natural environment, the natural system can replenish year after year.
And increase the level of monitoring to ensure that the rules on seafood catches are enforced, he says. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Honolulu.
VOA Asia continues now. Australian researchers say they've developed a new type of gel that could radically transform the treatment of Parkinson's disease and could also help stroke patients. From Sydney, Phil Mercer has the story.
Imagine a gel that could help a brain heal itself in response to a debilitating disease. Australian scientists hope they've created such a product. The hydrogel is made from natural amino acids, the building blocks of proteins, and has been shown to safely deliver replacement cells into damaged parts of the brain. The gel acts as a vehicle to safely transfer stem cells into the brain. Scientists believe the process can restore damaged tissue and replace lost neurons, which affect patients with Parkinson's disease, a nervous system disorder. About 100,000 Australians are estimated to suffer from the disease, which currently has no cure. Professor David Nisbet is one of the lead researchers from the Australian National University's College of Health and Medicine.
If you imagine a stroke, you've got a whole bunch of dead cells where you're no longer getting blood flow. In terms of Parkinson's disease, you lose a population of neurons. That's what results in the symptoms we're familiar with seeing. Basically, what we're doing is we're introducing replacement cells into the brain to replace those ones so that we can see some repair and regeneration. But they also have the added advantage that we've also shown that they can actually protect some of the existing cells in the surrounding tissue once they're implanted.
The gel is injected as a liquid. In the brain, it reverts to a jelly-like substance and can be administered to specific areas impaired by Parkinson's or a stroke. The stem cells can then be instructed to create replacement neurons. Nisbet says the early results are encouraging.
These all-natural hydrogels can successfully reverse the movement symptoms related to Parkinson's disease in animals, but we're yet to undertake human trials. But, I mean, it's looking really promising.
Scientists say the technology could also be used to eventually treat injured knees or shoulders. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Australia on Thursday will create a $280 million US reparation fund for members of its indigenous population who were forcibly removed from families months after 800 survivors filed a class action suit. Jason Albano reports.
Australia will pay millions in reparations to some Indigenous survivors forcibly taken from their families from as early as over a century ago. Dubbed the Stolen Generation, more than 100,000 Aboriginal children were taken over a period spanning decades that led to a historic apology from the government 13 years ago. Current Prime Minister Scott Morrison announced the fund's establishment on Thursday.
What happened is a shameful chapter in our national story. We have already confronted it with the national apology, but our deeds must continue to match our words.
Reuters' Jason Albano. Thank you for joining us. Thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao, and our BOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, Amy Heibels, Chris Cascayo, and Doug Bernard. I'm Ira Melman. Please stay safe and enjoy the day ahead.